I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 274 of Low Limit Football on the 2nd of March, 2020. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we'll look back on the Champions League results and give you the winners and losers, as well as what to expect for the second leg of the round of 16. El Clasico gives you a clear-cut leader at the top of the La Liga table. Is it Real? Is it Barca? We're going to let you know. MLS kicks off its 25th season with newcomers Inter Miami and Nashville opening their campaigns. We'll give you all the highlights. The coronavirus stops play in Italy and Switzerland. We're going to have the latest. And we look deeper into the phenomenon known as Erling Braut Haaland, with very special guest Norwegian journalist Jonas Javer, who will be joining us in just a little bit. But first, Mr. Roberto Rojas, how are you, my man?
Very well, Joe. How are you?
I'm marked safe from the coronavirus for the moment. How's that?
As am I as well.
And as much as it's, I mean, we're making a little bit of light of it because the truth is somewhere in the middle between, you know, what you're seeing, you know, locally and what the media is giving you. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle with this deadly virus, and I'm sure we'll get into it in a few minutes. But, you know, it is concerning, and it's in some ways the way it's been handled is a little comical. So that's why I kind of started out that way. What did you think of this week's MLS action? I know you and I both watched a little bit of it. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, we definitely saw a lot of goals and a lot of great goals. I think, especially given the news that has been going on over the last few days, you know, we might see a very open MLS season. I think we've been accustomed to that for quite some time. I think you always have your usual favorites like LAFC, you know, Atlanta United and many other teams as well. But I think now, looking at what we will obviously talk about in a few minutes, I think we have to make the case for one team in particular, at least of right now, that is able to be better than any team over there in MLS. So it's going to be tight. That's all I have to say. But after the news that we got, it could indeed go the way of one team out west. But yeah, I'm super excited that it's back, and let's hope for a really good season.
And I know the news you're talking about. We'll actually burst that bubble in a few minutes, like you said. So let's get right into the show proper. And tonight, trivia is my honor. So I think I've got one. You know, probably an easy one for you, my friend. But I'm going to give it to you anyway. I think, you know, I saw it posted in a couple of places, including during the broadcast. And the trivia question pertains to El Clasico on the weekend. Barca was shut out on the weekend, 2-0 to Real Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu. It follows up a home-on-home play where Barca drew 0-0 in the first leg at the Nou Camp and then losing 2-0 in the second leg for the 2019-2020 season. So Barca was shut out in both legs of El Clasico this year or this season. Give me the year the last time that happened.
I think I saw that stat pop up. Don't remember what year. I know the decade, but but I can't recall the actual year itself. So I do remember seeing something like that.
So you can give me, if you can give me the season, then that would be.
You want the season?
Yeah. What season? Okay. Okay. So give me this. Give me the season, and then we'll give it to the listeners in about 45 minutes or so, I think. So let's jump into opening thoughts, Rob. And opening thoughts tonight, like we did last week, is going to be a review of the Champions League. And first and foremost, we'll start with the Tuesday games that we were able to watch this week, starting first and foremost with Napoli. Napoli-Barcelona, that particular matchup finishing in a 1-1 draw. Barca in this one picking up a red card, kind of a lazy red card at the end. Arturo Vidal picks it up for yellow accumulation in the 89th minute. He got both the yellows at the same time. Dries Mertens' goal in the 30th minute. Antoine Griezmann in the 57th minute. This, for me, the goal in the second half for Griezmann really boosted Barca's spirits, in terms of what they were coming home to, because it was really a brilliant performance by Napoli in the first 45. They defended well, they countered well, they did pick up the Mertens goal, which was a golazo to say the least, and they were in the driver's seat, had to hold on for 30 more minutes, so Barca really picks up a massive, massive boost by getting that Griezmann goal, the road goal, going back to the Nou Camp, and really for me in the driver's seat now of qualifying for the next round. What were your thoughts on this particular match, Rob?
Well, I think the result that Barcelona wanted to get was obviously to come out of Naples with an away goal, and they definitely did do that. I think in terms of what we can definitely see heading into that second leg, you're right. I think Barcelona are indeed in the driver's seat at the moment. And at this moment as well, and we'll get to what is going to happen in El Clasico. I mean, this is a side that really is going to go all hands on deck for both competitions. But at the same time, what can they show within the big team against the big teams? I mean, we saw that with Napoli where, yes, they weren't as convincing, but they did get the job done. But, it's still in a way a really limited squad. Mm-hmm. So my fear is that with a limited squad like this, and also because of, they are fighting for these two competitions, I fear as if though they might have that kind of burnout that won't help them go all the way to the finish line for both competitions. So it's going to be interesting to see how they're able to really help themselves and how they're able to battle it out in two competitions like this. But I think in the first game, I think for the Champions League, they were able to get a result that I think was respectable in this case.
And keeping in mind, no Arturo Vidal for the second leg due to the red card. And if I'm not mistaken, no Sergio Busquets for the second leg because of yellow card accumulation. So it's going to be a tough battle for
plus,
sure.
Plus the injuries. And I think Piqué is suspended, if I'm not mistaken. But there's a lot of suspensions and injuries. And that's going to be really tough for them.
It's going to be interesting to see how they line up for that second leg, no doubt about it. Second match on Tuesday was a little bit more of a one-way traffic, and this was Bayern Munich going to Stamford Bridge and picking up a 3-0 victory over Chelsea. Serge Gnabry with two goals, Robert Lewandowski with a goal, Alphonso Davies with a massive, massive performance, especially the assist on the Lewandowski goal. This is, for all intents and purposes, this is a done deal, and it's really impressive for me, Rob, because Bayern Munich have not lost in this competition yet. They're the only team that have not lost dropped a result in this competition. It's an amazing performance. This is a team that has changed coaches midseason. We seem to forget that they're riding the top of the Bundesliga right now. They're in cruise control, moving into the next round of the Champions League. Bayern's got it all going for them, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so, and I think what many people are seemingly able to forget is that, with the likes of Real Madrid, Liverpool, Barca, City, those PSG that are arguably being talked about a bit more when it comes to the favorites, this Bayern Munich side has been really consistent, not just in the league action, but also in the Champions League. I mean, they've done really, really well. And I think to get a result like that away to Chelsea shows that they really are a true, true contender. And I think what Hansa Flick is doing is memorable, and I think they really have been able to show themselves how strong they've become within the last few months.
Sure, absolutely. Let's go over to the Bernabeu right now. where Real Madrid actually jumped out ahead in this one with a 60th minute goal from Isco, and really looked like they could put City on the back burner on this one. But then goals by Gabi Jesus in the 70th minute and Kevin De Bruyne at the penalty spot in the 83rd minute turned this around. 2-1 to Manchester City, two road goals going back to the Etihad. And probably the biggest story of this one, Sergio Ramos with his fourth red card in Champions League competition history ties him for the most. I know that was going to be my other option for the trivia question tonight. And I can't remember the other two players that got those four red cards, but he's tied for the most red cards in the history of the competition. Massive, massive loss, losing your captain, losing your central defender, and really kind of, you know, losing two road goals, really kind of sealing Real Madrid's fate in this competition, don't you think?
I don't know if sealing fate. I think when you're a team like Real Madrid that, you know, obviously have that history and on good form, you would say, and I think in terms of motivation, I don't think this tie is over, Joe. I really don't. I think, yes, they do have that disadvantage of not having their captain and their leader, but I think this tie is far from over.
It very well could be. The other two players, by the way, besides Sergio Ramos, with the most red cards, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Edgar Davids. And Edgar Davids, of the three players, Edgar Davids is the only one to not get a straight red card. It was yellow card accumulation four times in his career. So that was an interesting stat that I saw come up as well. Last match that I want to talk about, the match that I probably want to talk about the least, Juventus losing at Lyon 1-0. A Toussaint goal in the 31st minute in this one. Juve, Rob, were awful. I mean, just flat out awful. I'm looking at Flash Score here. Flash Score gives them a credit for a shot on goal. I think I looked on another app that gave them credit for two shots on goal, but by all accounts, it was zero shots on goal for them. And this Juve team looked awful. There's video of Dybala and Ronaldo talking about how the midfield isn't supporting them. The midfield looked slow. They looked lost. And this is a major problem for Maurizio Sarri going forward in the second leg. I mean, I think ultimately most fans expect Juve to overturn this 1-0 when they go back to the Allianz in Turin. But, man, this does not look like a team that can win the Champions League to me, Rob. What were your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, I think we have been proved wrong that this tie would have been easy for Juventus because of the advantage that they have in terms of talent. But after seeing such a performance like this, you know, you really have to doubt the midfield and kind of the creativity that Juventus are able to pose against opponents. I mean, I feel as if, though, for someone like Ronaldo in this case, it seems a bit frustrating that, you know, while he is the main source of the attack, and you would think that having those attacking advantages are able to help them in competitions like this, we can't count out. You still can't count out Lyon as a really good team as well. So, I think the tie it should be reversed, and I think Juventus will have the ability to go in advance to the next round. But I feel as if though it's still a long way to go, and it's going to be a really tough task. It's not because of Lyon trying to hold that. I think it's going to be Juventus having some sort of frustrating situation where they're more obligated to score, and for some reason it's not going to go their way for the first few minutes.
We posted a poll on our Twitter handle, which team is most likely to overturn their 1-0 deficit. There are three teams, Liverpool, Tottenham Hotspur, and Juve. And of the three teams, the majority was Liverpool will overturn their 1-0 to Atleti. 51.3% voted that way. Juve second at 39% to overturn Lyon, and Tottenham Hotspur a very distant 9.6% in the ability to overturn RB Leipzig in their second leg, especially given that Leipzig have a road goal where the other two were just home goals. So, Rob, before we close out the segment, I want to just rip through all of the quarterfinal matchups here, or the round of 16 matchups, and ask you from where we stand, where you think who you think will advance. Let's start with the previous ones. Dortmund currently have a 2-1 lead over PSG going back to the Parc des Princes. Who do you have, Dortmund or PSG?
That's tough. Do you want me to just give you a name or just the reason?
Just a name.
PSG.
I'm going to go Dortmund. I have a feeling, so I'm going to go Dortmund. Okay. That'll be my upset.
Sure.
Atleti, 1-0 lead over Liverpool going back to Liverpool on this one. I'm going to take Liverpool. I agree with everybody. I think Liverpool will turn it over.
Liverpool.
Yeah. Tottenham Hotspur going to RB Leipzig, down 1-0. Who do you think, Spurs or Leipzig?
Leipzig.
Yeah, I think Leipzig as well. Atalanta, 4-1 right now, up over Valencia, going to Spain for the second leg. I pretty much said already Atalanta is already the first team through, so I'm sticking with Atalanta. You, sir?
Atalanta, and by multiple goals, I will say.
Yeah, I think so, too. Napoli, 1-1 with Barcelona going to the Nou Camp. This one is going to be tough, but what do you think, sir?
Barca.
I'm going to go Napoli.
Okay.
There's something about it, and I think the misses that they're going to have is going to be an issue. I think I'm going to go with Napoli in this one. Chelsea, 3-0 down to Bayern Munich, going to Bayern. There's no chance. This is Bayern Munich all the way. You, sir?
I don't think there's going to be a repeat of 2012 Bayern Munich.
Definitely. Real Madrid down 2-1, going back to the Etihad, as we discussed just a few moments ago. Two road goals from Manchester City. I've got to think City through on this one.
And I disagree with you with that. I think Real Madrid somehow will do it.
Okay. That's going to be interesting, especially without Sergio Ramos. Last one, Lyon up 1-0 going to Juventus. What do you think, sir?
Juve.
Yeah, I think Juve. I think I'd be shocked, but I'm a homer, so I can't really, you know, it's hard for me to say yes or no.
But they could indeed get eliminated somehow.
Of course.
Somehow it can go there. It won't go their way, and they don't score a goal, or, you know, Lyon park the bus, which I doubt they will, but somehow it could happen.
Yeah, it definitely could.
And if that does happen, that would be a huge embarrassment, and also just applies more pressure for them to go win the league, which, let's be real, Joe. I mean, as a Juventus fan, you don't want the league. I mean, you do want the league in this way that, you know, it's more titles, but it's not the treasure chest that everyone wants.
It's not the goal. The minimum is the Champions League final. The maximum is winning the Champions League, and a loss at this point would cost Sadi his job before the end of the season. At least that's my opinion. So it'd be interesting to see. So that's our predictions. We'll probably revisit that coming up in a couple weeks. So, Rob, let's move on to our interview. We were able to join Jonas Jaeger just the other day. Got to talk to him about Erling Braut Haaland. Great, great interview, and I think everyone's going to enjoy it. So without further ado, the Jonas Jaeger interview. And joining us now on Low Limit Football, Norwegian journalist Jonas Jaeger. Jonas, how are you tonight?
Well, good. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks again for coming on the show. I want to start out, obviously, the biggest Norwegian on everyone's mind right now is Erling Braut Haaland. He comes over from Salzburg to Borussia Dortmund. He's been, I believe, second place in scoring in the Champions League right now. He's starting to work his way up the Bundesliga title, only recently taken over in the Austrian League for the goal-scoring lead. 19 years old, massive pressure put on this kid's shoulders. Tell us about his origins, where he comes from, and what makes him so special.
Well, first and foremost, he comes from a little place called Bryne, which is a small town outside of Stavanger, which is a bigger city. And he's from a place which is quite humble and renowned for being sort of quiet and easygoing, I should say. And I mean, obviously, he's the son of Alf Inge Haaland, who played for Leeds, who played for Man City, who famously had that injury from Roy Keane, that tackle when City faced Man United all those years ago. So he's been having a footballer's upbringing, and his mother as well is a, I believe she did triathlon or something along those lines as well. So he's an athlete's child, both in terms of his mother and his father. And you can see that in how he treats himself and how he treats his body. And the guy is very soft spoken. I mean, he doesn't say a lot. He hates doing interviews. He hates the press or talking to the press. He's been very open about that because his main focus and his main goal in life is to become the best footballer possible.
You know, that's kind of something that I wanted to drive into what Haaland is as a person and as a player, because, you know, I think he said in multiple interviews that one of his inspirations are Cristiano Ronaldo, and you kind of make a bit of those correlations and that kind of similarity as someone that, you know, is very hardworking, that wants to be the best that he could be. And that's very, very similar to Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, how is he perceived in Norway at this time? You know, because obviously we know the connection with his father. But of course, I think heading into this season, because of the great rise that he had in the Champions League for Salzburg and then now for Dortmund, and even when he scored those 9 goals for the U-20 team back in the World Cup. What has the perception been for Haaland currently from a Norwegian standpoint?
We've never seen anything like him before. We've never seen anything that's even close to being similar. I mean, if we're going to compare him to anyone, it will be John Carew, who in the early 2000s obviously went from Rosenborg to Valencia and was a fantastic player. But even though he had the potential to become one of the best strikers in the world, we are legitimately looking at a kid 19 years old from a small town in Norway who now has to be ranked as, if you're ranking number 9s in the world right now, he'd be up there as, you know, number 3 or number 4. I mean, who's better than him at the moment? And we haven't seen anything like it. And it's sort of like in Norway, we have to pinch ourselves a little bit because whenever he does something, we kind of hyperbole it and make it into a big thing. But then again, we're not overhyping him anymore. That's just how good he is. And I think that's taking Norwegians a little bit by surprise because when we think he's reached his limit, he just kicks it up a notch. And it's absolutely mind-boggling to look at and to perceive his age and perceive how he's able to always overcome expectations. So we're very cautious in that we're kind of expecting him to have a downfall at some stage. But then again, whenever we think he's not going to perform, he just outperforms any sort of dream we might have for him. I've personally never seen anything like it. The Danish national coach, Åge Hareide, who is Norwegian, obviously, he's the only manager to win the league as a manager in Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. He's seen everything and seen it all and, you know, managed the best players and played alongside the best players and watched the best players of years gone by. And he said he has never seen anything like it. And when someone of that ilk says that about the talent that we're seeing now on display, then obviously we're witnessing something special and something that might just be generational defining for Norwegian football.
What makes Erling Haaland special in the way that he plays and the physical specimen and the really the deadly poacher that he's been so far, even at 19?
Well, you're touching on it there. Like he's there. He has that sense of where the ball is going to fall. His understanding of space and how he always wants to run into goal-scoring opportunities, and that he always aligns himself inside the box is just something that's, at this stage, it's world-class to just look at how his movement is and how his understanding of just standing in front of the goal. I mean, it's the simplest thing in the world, right? But every striker sort of gets anxious about not getting the ball, but he always seems to be so calm and collected in everything he does, and he's underrated in terms of his link-up play. He's a decent dribbler on the ball. He sort of has everything at his age, and as you said, with his size as well. It's a digression, but I was watching him when he played for Molde when he was, I believe, 16 or 17 years old. He played in a national stadium. No, not the national stadium, but the second biggest stadium in Oslo against Vålerenga, which is the Capitals team. And he was playing against a defender called Felipe Carvalho. He's a big dude. He's about 6'2", you know, about 200 pounds. He's huge. He's a muscular guy. And Haaland was throwing him around like he was nothing. It was absolutely amazing to watch. And I was standing next to Haaland in the mixed zone after the game. And again, 16, 17, he was towering over me. And I was just wondering, what is going to become of this guy? And I couldn't even imagine that what he's doing now would happen. And it's all down to his hard work. It's all down to him having made the right choices as well. That's something that's perhaps not been examined enough, but he's chosen the right clubs every single time he's been able to move. He chose Molde because Ole Gunnar Solskjær was there, who's obviously perhaps the deadliest striker Norway has seen in terms of understanding the role of the striker. Molde is also a quite small place, and you know there's not too much more than football going on there. And then he chose Salzburg again, which is a team and a city that, you know, breeds football now in terms of developing talent. We've seen that with so many of the other players that have gone from Salzburg and on to greater things. And then when you have the chance of going to the likes of Man United and Juventus, and you end up choosing Dortmund, obviously Dortmund is not a small team. It's not a minor league team in any respect, if you look at Man United and Juventus. But at the same time, Dortmund is not a capital city. It's not huge pressure by living there. So he's chosen places where he's been able to solely focus on becoming a better footballer and not having all the noise around him, which I think speaks volume to also the maturity of him and also to the people that he surrounds himself with.
Yeah, I believe so. I agree. I think given the reputation that Borussia Dortmund have with those young players, either from their academies or buying them abroad, they really know how to mold those good players in for them to essentially later go to a bigger club. And that leads me to my next question, Jonas. I mean, it's still early days. I mean, there's already been a lot of talk about what his next club will be, and he's only been in Germany for only 2 months, but we have to ask that. I mean, if he continues his fine form, and I think right now he's on a four-year contract, if I'm not mistaken. Sorry, 4.5 years. So, you know, what's next? I mean, do we see someone like Haaland, you know, leave before that contract ends? I mean, we already saw a lot of rumors of, you know, your obvious, like, Real Madrid and many other clubs like that. You know, is there a scenario where Haaland will eventually, you know, leave as early as we know it?
It's a good question. I think it's the question which is on everyone's mind. But I think that that is a question that we're asking. But the only guy that's perhaps not asking that question is Haaland himself. He's just focused on becoming the best player possible and delivering for the team that he is at right now. Personally, I would not be surprised if he moves. But then again, why should he move? He's in a perfect environment. He's able to always develop. He's in a team that you know has built their attacking play already around his qualities. And it's linking up well with every single player that attacks in that team. And if you look at that Dortmund team, everyone attacks. Everyone is trying to feed him the ball. Everyone is trying to make him a better player. And so, I mean, why should he move? Then again, there's also been the rumor that there's a buyout clause in his contract, which doesn't go into effect before the summer of 2022, I believe, or 2021, one of the two, which would be about 75 or 70 million euros. So, I mean, why should teams fall over themselves trying to buy him now this summer when they can actually look at him for at least another year, maybe another 2 years, and see if this is really the real deal and someone who's going to be a mainstay in world football for years to come. Again, he's 19. I mean, if you buy him at 19, buy him at 21, what's the difference? So I think he'll remain, but I think that there'll be a lot of teams looking at him during the course of the summer, if he keeps this up. Obviously, that should go without saying, I think.
Jonas, I want to jump in here because I want to follow up, because I feel like I'm looking ahead at Borussia Dortmund's schedule right now, and I feel like there's a microcosm of the pressures that he will need to handle. When you look up their upcoming matches, and I mean this is immediately, Mönchengladbach on the road, Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League on the road, then they're home to Schalke, on the road to Wolfsburg, and then home in Der Klassiker to Bayern Munich. I mean, these are five massive, massive matches in Dortmund's schedule, all in a row, all coming up right away. Could this be a microcosm to see how this young man handles this type of pressure with these massive games, with the title on the line, with the Champions League on the line, with the biggest match in Germany on the line, and basically give other teams like the Real Madrids, like the Barcelonas, the teams with deeper pockets, an idea of what kind of pressure this kid can handle?
Definitely. And I also think within that line of matches, you're also having an international break, I think, in which Norway will play their biggest game in recent history when they face Serbia in the Nations League. So he really is looking at perhaps, I wouldn't say career defining because it's so early, but definitely a defining moment, a defining period of his young career. Look at all those games. I'll tell you what, if there's one guy who's licking his lips and thinking, yeah, this is my stage, it'll be him. He's not going to shy away from that pressure at all. He's looking forward to it. He's probably already, you know, has his calendar ringed around every single game, looking forward to matching up against the biggest and best players in the world. I mean, I got to be honest. I was looking at that game against Paris Saint-Germain. When nothing happened in that game, I was thinking, oh, yeah, he's finally kind of reached his peak. I mean, he's playing against the likes of Thiago Silva, Marquinhos, and so forth. This is sort of when he gets his wake-up call that he needs to become a little bit better. And then he just smashes in two goals like nothing. And when he was interviewed after the game, he just said, for that second goal where he just hammers it in after the assist from Gio Reyna, he just said, well, I'll just close my eyes and, you know, hammer it home. And that's sort of his easygoing nature. I just put my foot through it. That was all I did. And that's sort of his, I suppose the paradox is that it just looks so amazing. It seems so outlandish, but to him, it's just another day on the job. So I mean, he's definitely looking forward to it, but we're the ones who probably hyper it up and make it bigger than it needs to be, because for him, it's just he's out there to do a job and to show the world that he is one of the best players in the world, which he, again, kind of is about to segment or cementate into reality.
It definitely is a big conversation topic right now, so I totally agree. Now, looking into, it's a good segue that you mentioned about the international break, because we're going to lead into talking about Norway and kind of their rise to, I guess you would say, a new generation of great players. I mean, we obviously talk about Haaland, but we also haven't talked a lot about Martin Odegaard and how he's being perceived right now from at least those that are watching La Liga because of the great form that he's been at Sociedad. How have you been able to see his season so far at Sociedad? And, you know, he's still on loan. I mean, he came in with that immense pressure of being that youngster from Norway going to Real Madrid. You know, is there a case where Zinedine Zidane could indeed count on him coming into the next season?
Well, there was a point this season where you'd actually had to legit ask yourself if Martin Ødegaard was better than, you know, in terms of form, perhaps not in talent and skills as of right now, but in terms of form, if he was performing at a higher level than Luka Modric and Toni Kroos. And I think that speaks to his talents and how good he can become. You know, it's funny because when he was younger, I remember this very well. Everyone was talking about him being a huge flop and, you know, sort of the Norwegian Freddy Adu who couldn't live up to the hype and all those sorts of things because Real Madrid bought him so young and made him into this new Galactico. And then he had, you know, the loans at Vitesse and so forth. And Heidefein, I think it was as well. His story is actually quite interesting because it shows that perhaps we've been too early to judge with him. And the way he's performing now and performing this season just shows that Norway and perhaps Real Madrid as well have a playmaker for years to come, because some of the things he does on the ball and his understanding of the game is just second nature, and it's incredible to watch. And also I've had the pleasure of interviewing Martin on a few occasions, sitting down with him and speaking to him, and the guy is extremely humble. He's very focused on anything he does and sort of understands his position. I mean, he understands the hype. He understands why people have been that way, but he also takes it in the stride. And even though a lot of people are talking about him going to Real Madrid next season, he's in his mind, I think, is set on staying for the 2 years that he's loaned out to Real Sociedad, because to him, it's so important to finally find a space that he can call home and that he can sort of develop and sort of feel comfortable in, because he was moved around so much in terms of his loan periods. It was a year and a half at Heidefein, and then he was at Vitesse, and then he was at Real Sociedad. So he kind of wants to settle down somewhere, at least for a little while, before he actually goes back to Real Madrid. But then again, he might actually be like a victim of his own success and that Real Madrid have to call him back earlier. And again, that speaks volumes as to something that aligns both Haaland and Ødegaard, in that they're extremely focused, they're humble, and they're mature in the way that they view their careers. Something which is also aligned with them is that they both have fathers who play top football as well, who can kind of guide them and make sure that they do the right choices all the way through.
Definitely. I think having that kind of inspiration from those that have been there kind of helps them when they do make it up, when they do make the big jump to the professional career. Jonas, I mean, now looking into Norway as a whole, I mean, obviously, we would love to see them go into Euro qualification. I'm sorry, into the Euros this summer. But of course, they still have to play Serbia in this playoff. And then the winner of that will have to play either Scotland or Israel this month, actually. Yeah. You know, how confident are Norway looking into this playoffs? And, you know, what do you expect coming from Norway heading into these type of games?
We're a little bit too confident, I think. Some people think that this is going to be not easy, but that Serbia is a weaker team than Norway. And I definitely do not subscribe to that thought. I think Serbia has some amazing talent and some of the best players on show. You know, Sergei Milinkovic-Savic on his own is just a monster in midfield, and shown that for Lazio this season. But we're looking at a Norway side which is starting to take shape and starting to become a potential European powerhouse, and that we're developing players that not only they don't play for the teams in Belgium and Netherlands anymore. We're talking about players that go to big teams in the Premier League, the Bundesliga, to La Liga, players that are now being sought out by the biggest sides in the world. So we're starting to look at a generation that, that might actually be able to sort of, first and foremost, we need to surpass both Sweden and Denmark, because we've always been able to, we always had to look at them sort of being the bigger brothers in terms of international football. We also have to witness Iceland sort of becoming this international darling. And even now you have Finland who have qualified for the Euros. So we're just waiting for Norway to sort of, you know, take back what we believe is rightfully ours, because in the 90s we were the powerhouse. So so we're expecting a lot, and we're not demanding it, but we're hoping. And we also have a great manager in Lars Lagerbäck, who obviously spearheaded both Sweden with Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and also was the mastermind behind Iceland. So we're hoping that he's able to also take Norway to their first big tournament since Euro 2000. And just a side note to that, Erling Haaland wasn't even born the last time Norway was playing in a big tournament. So this is definitely a generation who are able to define themselves and to define the next future or the next few years going into Norwegian's international future.
Well, I think there's a massive opportunity here, because for me, Jonas, just looking at the draw, I think Serbia is going to be definitely a tough out. I think these are two teams that are on equal footing. I think they both had a similar run through difficult groups in qualifying. Obviously, Spain and Sweden for Norway in Group F. And then when you look back on Serbia's group, they had to face Ukraine and Portugal in Group B. So I think, you know, and obviously Portugal with the defending champion in this tournament, that is definitely a tough ask with Cristiano Ronaldo. So, but I feel like that the winner of this match, the semifinal match, is going to advance. I don't feel that Scotland or Israel are going to be nearly as strong. So, you know, I would not look past the Serbian side, right? I mean, you mentioned Sergej Milinkovic-Savic. They've got they've got Maksimovic, Milinkovic, and actually Alexander Kolarov, very, very experienced as their captain, will probably, you know, be playing in these matches for them as well. They're going to be a difficult out. I agree with you 100%, but I feel like if and when they do get through Serbia, if they can beat Serbia, I feel like the next step to get into that Euro is going to be an easier of the two steps for them. And what are your thoughts on the other side of the bracket? Do you feel that it is going to be an easier run through the Israels or the Scotlands of the world, or do you feel like all four teams are equally matched?
No, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think the winner of Norway-Serbia is going to the Euros. And for Norway's sake, the big advantage is that that game will be played here in Norway at the National Stadium. And also the final, which will be... if the winner of Norway and Serbia will also play the final at home. So, I mean, Israel or Scotland, given that Norway, should Norway win, would have to come to Norway to play that final game. So Norway has it all in their hands. And I think that that Serbia game is going to be so defining. And but then again, as you said, they have some amazing players. But I mean, just a side note, I mean, I was before you guys called, I was sitting here and I was kind of trying to make up like a Scandinavian 11, like the best players of Scandinavia, trying to make it into a team. And I had four Norwegians in that team. And I can't remember the last time I was able to put four Norwegians in and you know, tried to put my national alignment aside and sort of try to be as neutral as possible. There are legitimate four Norwegians that would go into that team. And that's a little bit surreal to me, because we've always, as I said, been sort of the little brother that we've always had the potential, but never ever been able to sort of get up there with the likes of Denmark and Sweden.
And obviously with 5 days in between matches, the semifinals on the 26th, the finals on the 31st, it's going to be a tough ask for any of those other teams, Scotland or Israel, to go ahead and turn around 5 days and then travel to Norway to compete in that final. Final question.
Should they win?
Or, I mean, even if you look at it, should they lose, it's going to be a tough ask for them to go to Serbia as well. So
it's, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Last question. I mean, obviously, we've talked a little bit about Martin Odegaard. We've talked, obviously, about Erling Braut Haaland. Is there another youngster that you want to point out on this Norwegian side that we should keep an eye out for, especially moving through these qualifiers and then possibly into the Euro?
Oh, man. There's a huge amount of talent. But given in terms of the national team, Lars Lagerbäck has always sort of had his squad that he doesn't sort of waver away from. So I'm not sure if you're going to see a lot of new players coming in. But, I mean, Norway have – I would like for Norway to be able to have better central defenders. But Christopher Ayer, the big guy at Celtic, he is something else. I mean, he used to play as a midfielder. He was a captain at his team, which are called Start, which is a pretty big side in Norway. They're from the south of Norway, and they played in the top division at the time. He was their club captain, never mind just team captain, the club captain at 16. So he is a leader and someone that we look upon as a future national team captain. And if they can put him alongside the gentleman playing at St. Pauli, his name escapes me at the moment, Leo Shiri Östegård, who hasn't made his debut yet for the national team, but he played alongside Forlum in the U20 team. He's sort of been he's had sort of similarities to Sergio Ramos in the way that he plays. So if they can sort of put them together, we're sort of talking a little bit, or at least dreaming a little bit about a potential sort of poor man's Piqué and Ramos in the future. So we're hoping that those two together can become a national symbol in terms of our defense, and obviously help us build upon great attacking talents, because that's sort of what we have more so than defending talent. So I'm going to say Christopher Ayer and Leo Shiri Östegård. Those would be the two guys that to go away from all the attacking talents, I point those two out.
Ayer, a whopping 21 years old right now. Fantastic shout out. Jonas, thank you so much for a great interview and all the great knowledge on Holland as well as Norway and the national team. We really appreciate it and looking forward to having you again very, very soon.
My pleasure. Just let me know.
And special thanks again to Jonas Jæver for joining us and a great discussion that we had on really all things Norwegian football as they're on their rise and getting ready to qualify for the 2020 Euros. Rob, let's jump back into Europe and let's jump into El Clasico. We had talked about it real quick in the opening monologue. Real Madrid posting a 2-0 victory over Barcelona in this one, taking the season series, moving back to the top spot in La Liga. You know, and you look back, we just talked about the Champions League results, Barca with a 1-1 draw, Real Madrid with the 2-1 defeat to Manchester City. This, I feel like this match meant more to Real Madrid than it did to Barcelona. Barca did not, I didn't think they played poorly, Rob. I thought they'd played fairly well, but they didn't make the most of the chances that they created. And granted, Real Madrid created more chances, but ultimately they capitalized on their chances with goals from Vinicius Jr., which really was the result of a Gerard Piqué deflection as he went to stop the shot, which just took it over Ter Stegen's shoulder. And then a brilliant goal from Mariano in stoppage time to really seal the deal in this one. They take over first place. Now they're going to be the carrot that Barcelona is going to chase. And depending on if you feel like they're going to advance or not going to advance in the Champions League, this is really what they have left to play for. And with Real Madrid in the driver's seat for this and really playing well, in my opinion, it's going to be tough for Barca to take them over, don't you think?
Yeah, I think what we said this last week, that whoever was going to come out victorious will end up having pressure in two competitions, not just one. So for them, obviously, both teams are still in the Champions League and, of course, in the La Liga race itself. But I think for Real Madrid, after the kind of mini crisis that they went through, where you know they ended up losing in La Liga, they lost in the Champions League, and now they get this big win over Barcelona, over the Santiago Bernabéu, you know, it gives them that kind of ease back to them. But you know, as we've seen, and we definitely know how competitive La Liga can be, you know, it's far from over. You know, it won't be over until that final day in May. So It will be interesting. I think for in terms of the game itself, I agree. I think Barcelona were very, very unlucky to not get the goal that they needed. I think had it not been for Courtois' outstanding performances, you know, Barcelona would have been able to get a few goals in the game. But yeah, I think they were unable to capitalize on their advantages where, you know, when you have players like Vinicius and, of course, Mariano scoring, that were able to do that. That gave them the advantage. So it really is going to be an interesting next few weeks because, you know, we could see a case of even both these teams should they screw up or goes the other team's way, you know, they could be out of the competition for the Champions League, meaning that they could focus mainly on that La Liga race. And I think, as we said before, when it came to Juventus, I think for these type of teams, you know, they don't want to just focus on the league. You know, they want to win the Champions League. That's always been it really is kind of what they're edging on. But yeah, I think Barcelona now are under immense pressure as well, especially given the amount of injuries and kind of the limited squad that they have at their disposals in comparison to Real Madrid.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I found interesting about this, you know, we talk about Barca being shut out for the year, right, in this particular matchup. Lionel Messi hasn't scored in this matchup in La Liga play since 2018, going back all the way to May 6th of 2018 in the 52nd minute. That was the last time Lionel Messi has registered a goal or an assist in this competition. So we're talking almost 2 years of competition here, and Messi being held off the boards. I mean, that's, for me, that's an incredible stat. The last time Messi scored in this matchup, Cristiano Ronaldo also scored in it. So think about that. It's been so long that I'm wondering how this is affecting Messi. What do you think about that?
Maybe that's a coincidence that he's not there anymore, that maybe there's not that kind of ambitious, which I think is kind of far-fetched. I think when you're playing these type of games, you want to be at your best. But, yeah, it is very weird. I mean, is the magic in these type of, and we even kind of saw it in the game against Napoli, where, you know, he was obviously effective in that sense, but he didn't have that magic that we all assumed
right.
He could. So it kind of poses the question, and obviously we don't want to go into this huge tangent of what Messi can and can't do, but, you know, is the age starting to get to him? Is he not being able to perform in the biggest games? Because I think what we saw in the return leg against Liverpool back in the semifinals, that proved to be a bit on Messi about not being able to demonstrate how great he's become and why he's been able to show up in the big games.
Right. Yeah.
Now you have this and El Clasico. You know, are we starting to have that kind of conversation? I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Joe?
I think there's potential for it. I think you're starting to see a little bit of the fall off from Messi. I think the quick bursts of speed where, you know, I think back to a play in the first half in this particular matchup on the weekend where he outran, I want to say it was Rafael Varane, and basically shot the ball right at Thibaut Courtois. So, you know, I think we're seeing a little bit of that, and it's expected. I mean, you know, the weight load that he has carried, you know, both, you know, emotionally, physically, all the matches, the Barcelona matches, the weight of an Argentina and trying to succeed there, you know, you got to cut him some slack, I think, here a little bit and realize that, yeah, I mean, he is somewhat human, you know, not entirely human. We still think he's some type of creature from another planet. But this matchup is starting to show just how human he is. It's six matches in a row now that he has not scored for Barcelona, point, no goal or assist. And
six games.
Yeah, six games, including two Copa del Rey matches.
No, but he scored against Eibar.
No. I'm talking about against Real Madrid, El Clasico.
Ah, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. In the last six El Clasico matchups, including two from the Copa del Rey, he has not registered a point. Now, granted, Real Madrid, of those six matches, Real Madrid's only won one of them, and that was this weekend, 2-0. Before that, it was 0-0, 1-0 Barcelona, 3-0 Barcelona, 1-1, and 5-1 Barcelona is the last time. You know, Barca, he did not score in a match. Then prior to that was that May 6th, 2018
So let me ask you this, Joe. Has the standard of El Clasico then changed?
I think a little bit.
Because do you think the departure of Cristiano Ronaldo and that kind of rivalry in itself kind of shifted the way that, you know, there isn't that kind of fire in them anymore?
Yeah, you know, I do think there is something to that, because we've seen both players actually mention this. I want to say it was not last year's Ballon d'Or, but maybe the year before, where it was one of them, either Cristiano Ronaldo or Messi, said how the other player drove them to be better.
I think it was Cristiano. I think it was Messi. I think it could be both of them.
Yeah,
both of them.
So, you know, I think there's something to that, where we've heard about teams or players playing up to their level or down to their opponent's level, right? I think this is the kind of thing where Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi drove each other. And, you know, they drove each other in this stage. And that's why this stage, this El Clasico, has become such a big worldwide event, is because these two megastars drove each other and you really got the best out of each one of them. And I think not having that foil for Lionel Messi might affect him a little bit here, where he's not getting that drive, that Cristiano Ronaldo, that somebody that he has to outdo. And credit also to Real Madrid, Rob, that they've become more of a team concept since the departure of Cristiano Ronaldo. So it's a little different feel. The match for me is a little different feel, and I think it's probably a little different feel for Lionel Messi as well. You know,
right.
So
right, and I think, of course, like you said, I think the age factor comes into play as well. I mean, right. Those guys that were performing at the level, I mean, they were in their late 20s, early 30s. So mm-hmm. Now they're in their mid 30s.
Yeah.
So they're obviously going to come of age, but they're still wonderful, wonderful players in any case.
And last fact that we don't want to get lost on, Real Madrid right now in La Liga, the best defensive team. Only given up 17 goals in 26 matches. I mean, it's an incredible accomplishment. And to shut out Barcelona twice on the season, a Barcelona team that scored 62 goals on this season. I'm just doing some quick math, just judging real quick, 24 goals ahead of Real Madrid. It's a massive, massive accomplishment, and a team that can score in bunches. And Real Madrid has kept them off the board for 180 minutes. It's certainly an incredible feat, and it could go all the way. You know, we've still got another 12 matches to go before the end of the season, but it could be the start of the end for Real Madrid, now currently leading Barca by 1 point in La Liga. So let's go look at MLS, Rob. Let's come across the pond. MLS opened up their play this weekend. Some great play. One match that I know you and I definitely enjoyed was the 1-0 LAFC victory over Inter Miami. I just want to give my thoughts on this one real quick, because Carlos Vela scored a magnificent goal where he chips Luis Robles, the new, obviously everyone's new on Inter Miami, but the former Red Bull goalkeeper. And I felt bad for Luis Robles, because up until this point in the match, he was it, man. He was the man of the match. I mean, just stop after stop after stop. And LAFC were just relentless in terms of their attacks. I thought it was a great performance by Vela. I thought it was a promising performance from Inter Miami for me. I thought they really accredited themselves quite well. Some of the other performances that we want to talk about real quick. Seattle Sounders 2-1 over the Chicago Fire at home. They had to rely on a brace from Jordan Morris with one of those goals, the winning goal, coming in the stoppage time in the second half, the 93rd minute. So the champions get back on their winning ways. Usually takes Seattle a little time to get going. This time they actually played well and they got there. The other one, which I think you and I want to talk about for a second, is Atlanta United beating newcomers Nashville SC 2-1. But the big news out of this one, Joseph Martinez lost for what is easily the foreseeable future and possibly the season with a torn ACL in this one, which is a massive blow to Atlanta United. You kind of alluded to it a little bit in our opening chat there, where this could affect, you know, this could clear the path for LAFC to become that champion. A great weekend overall for me, Rob, in MLS and a nice little, according of what the league could be this year. What are your thoughts on the weekend's play?
Yeah, I think it was very interesting. I think there was a lot of entertainment to this play. I think we really will see a competitive league in itself with various teams fighting for the MLS Cup, and which has kind of been the norm, as we kind of already know in MLS, of how unpredictable it may be. But as you said, I think with that loss of Joseph Martinez, which not just a big loss for Atlanta, I think it's a big loss for the league in itself to lose one of the best players, if not the best striker in the league. So it will definitely be a big loss. But I think when you look at LAFC, I mean, obviously very, 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 very early that I'm saying something like this, but they are the team to fear. I think they really are the team to fear in all of MLS so far. I think with, it was unfortunate that they weren't able to go and win MLS Cup last year. Albeit it was a really good Seattle team, but I'm really excited for this one. I think this will be a good season with a lot of good players in disposal. I'm pretty sure, hopefully, a lot of great goals that we've been seeing, and hope it continues.
Yeah, it's no doubt about it. A couple other little tidbits here: Montreal Impact, Thierry Henry winning his first league match. 2-1 victory on the weekend over the New England Revolution and a New York Red Bull. No Bradley Wright Phillips anymore. No Luis Robles, like we mentioned earlier. No problem as they take a 3-2 decision over FC Cincinnati to open the league as well. So DC United losing on the weekend to open up against Colorado Rapids 2-1. So that's going to be interesting, too. Giuseppe Rossi getting in on that one, obviously signing earlier in the week and getting, I think, the last 20 minutes or so. You know, obviously not much to speak to there, just getting limited time at the end. But do you think Giuseppe Rossi can make a big return, to MLS or to his career, at least have some semblance of saving his career and performing well, performing like what you expected Giuseppe Rossi to do?
He hasn't played in quite a while. It'll be hard to really see him be able to be that same force that he was. So, unfortunately, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for him. And Colorado's going to be a tough place to do it, too. So, it's, hoping for the best, but we'll have to see what happens. Let me ask you one last question before we come off of MLS. Nashville SC, newcomers. Inter Miami, newcomers. Both losers on the weekend, but both, performing reasonably well. Do you think either of them make the playoffs?
No.
I think Inter could. They still need a piece. Yeah, they need a piece.
Up front.
And we'll have to see what they get this summer.
Because I don't think Pizarro will do it all but by himself.
No, and they're kind of playing Pizarro out of position from what he's normally accustomed to when he played at Monterrey. So it's going to be, you're right, they do need one more piece, but I think that one piece could possibly get them in, and it depends on how quickly they get them once that summer window opens for sure. So
yep.
Let's move on from MLS and let's talk about something a little bit more serious. And obviously the coronavirus is on everybody's mind. And I'm not going to get into the politics of, I'm part of a couple of different chat groups and there are a lot of Inter fans that are not happy with the cancellation of the Derby d'Italia.
But Joe, you're a Lowland football certified doctor. You have every right to say about this.
Well, no, I'm not going to pretend to get in the minds of the FIGC and figure out what they have. I think they should have done a better job, first of all, of saying what the plan was going to be. Basically saying, no, Juventus, you guys are going to play behind closed doors. Or no, you guys, we're canceling the week. We're canceling these games in Northern Italy. You look back, they canceled these games. There was four or five games, and I'll go and get you the list of the games in a moment. But they canceled four or five games on the weekend in the Serie A because they were being played in Northern Italy. They were being played in regions that were affected by this virus. And lo and behold, Serie B had games in the same area still played. And still played in front of crowds. They did not play behind closed doors. So you have to look at those things and say, you have to question the decision making of the FIGC and say, what are you guys doing? Are we closing our doors? Are we playing behind closed doors? But make a decision and stick to it. For me, I know a lot of Inter fans are upset that they feel like this benefits Juve. Juve's not playing well right now. For me, the team that benefits the most here, Rob, is Lazio.
Right.
Okay. Lazio now are the carrot.
We're top of the league right now.
They're top of the league right now. They come off the weekend as well with a victory where they did get to play against Bologna at home in Rome. Now Juve have to chase them. Now Inter have to chase both of them, and that is a big ask. And so there's a psychological advantage to Lazio. Lazio also not playing in any of their competitions, get to rest their players, really get to manage their schedule from here all the way down. Where Juve and Inter are both in European competitions, they're both in Coppa Italia, they're both on multiple fronts, trying to maintain some semblance of quality on the pitch. And here's Lazio. Game completed, win in hand, and now everybody's chasing them. So the biggest winner here is Lazio. But again, you look back at the Juventus part of this. Juve, I could see where they would want to not play this match. You look no further than the U23 team, which their entire team right now is in quarantine. Because they played a match, and I'm looking up the information real quick. They played Serie C side Pianese, and one of their players tested positive for coronavirus. And here's a team that's played them, playing a player with coronavirus. They've actually quarantined the entire under-23 team. So, there's major concern at Juventus for this coronavirus. They're in a region that is roughly, you want to say it's just outside of the region that's hardest hit, but they're still, directly close. They've directly played a match in a match where a player had the coronavirus. You can see the added caution on Juventus' side on this one. there was also talk about how you would close the stadium, but you would close it to Inter fans because they're coming from Milan, which are one of the hard hit regions. You can understand that. And I don't think that would be fair to Inter fans, you know, but at the same time, Inter got to play the Derby d'Italia in front of 80,000 people, 80,000 Inter fans. It wouldn't be fair to Juve to have to close their doors and play in front of nobody. So there's a competitiveness that needs to be, you need to be mindful of here with this. But I think ultimately we have to remember, first priority here is for the Italian government to nip this virus, to contain it, and to slow it down so that it doesn't infect or kill more people. Look at what the Swiss League did. The Swiss League now has shut down. They've shut themselves down, I want to say, till the end of March. I'm looking for the exact date here. March 15th. Swiss League has been put on hold until March 23rd because of the coronavirus outbreak. So this is a league that has completely shut it down. The Swiss clubs did not want to play behind closed doors. So they said, you know what? Fine, we're going to shut it down till the 23rd. Everybody stay home. And they've made a decision. I think the way that the Swiss League has handled this, the Italian League should take a page out of their book and say, okay, we need to make a decision, stick to that decision, and move forward. Rob, I've rambled on here for quite long enough. I do want to get your thoughts on this because I think it's an important topic. It's a concerning topic.
I think it really is. I think, unfortunately, we've seen the lack of due diligence being made and the lack of authority that was made by the FIGC. And I completely agree with everything you said. I think they have become a bit ignorant in the fact of what they're not keeping to their own beliefs. And unfortunately, it's only going to cause much more problems. Obviously, we don't know how the disease will be able to contain itself. But no, if this continues and there's more problems, it's just going to mess up all of what's going on over there in Italy.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to see how the FIGC, I believe there's a meeting on Wednesday where they're going to make a decision as to how they're going to move forward. And we've got the Coppa Italia matches coming up right away. So I think there's major concern to get this decided sooner than later. So we'll have to see how it gets handled. Rob, let's close out our talk for the night. Let's hit our matches of the week coming up. And on Wednesday, we're going to kick it off with some Copa Libertadores. Barcelona SC versus Independiente del Valle at 5:15 p.m. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rob. IDV, Sudamericana champions, correct?
Yes.
Yep. So. Yep. And the other matchup on Wednesday, LDU Quito facing River Plate, 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday as well. Let's go to Saturday. La Liga opens us up with a great one. Atletico Madrid Sevilla, 10 a.m. on Saturday. Then matches pending, decisions pending. The Serie A will give you Atalanta Lazio at 12 p.m., which should be an absolute cracker if they do kick that one off. Borussia Mönchengladbach will face Borussia Dortmund at 12:30 p.m., which is a huge match for the top of the table. And MLS will close out our Saturday evening with Toronto FC NYCFC at 5 p.m. On Sunday, we have the big one, the Manchester Derby, 12:30 p.m., Manchester United, Manchester City. And we'll close out our play on the weekend with Lille and Lyon in Ligue 1 with a top-of-the-table battle at 4 p.m. Rob, let's go back to the trivia question. As I told you earlier, Barcelona got shut out twice in El Clasico this year, 0-0 earlier in the season and 2-0 on the weekend. Can you name the last time that happened in a season?
I can.
All right.
I actually remember seeing this, but I want to make sure this is the correct year. It was in this. I'll start with the decade. It was in the 70s.
Correct.
My guess that it was 1972, 73.
Close.
73-74.
Closer.
74-75.
And that would be a bingo. 1974-1975 season is the last time Barca were shut out in both legs of El Clasico to Real Madrid. And so something that they haven't repeated in 45 years, and they've done it this weekend. So, well, my friend, without anything left on the docket, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. And again, for episode 274 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Jonas Yaver for joining us. Next week, we're going to preview the second legs of the Champions League coming up. We'll talk Copa Libertadores, and hopefully we'll have a little more clarity on the coronavirus and how it will affect the Serie A. So for episode 274 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.